I'm going to resist asking how the temperature is to most of you. I think it's a little warm, but that's just me. So anyway, I'm glad you're here. We are working on this series that we've been doing throughout the summer. We have one more week after this on looking at our emotions and our feelings and kind of how that plays in our life. The reality is that they have a huge impact on us, and if we recognize that and learn how to direct and control them, they can be a huge benefit. I mean, there's a reason God created us with the capacity for emotions and feelings, but we need to really, really be careful. The one we're looking at this week is anger. Maybe the of all the emotions that we can find evidence for, there's probably more for this one than most. And there was a movie that came out a while back called Inside Out. It was overtly a kid's movie. It's for everybody. And what they did is they did an animated look at how emotions and feelings kind of work in somebody. And so I want you to watch this clip. And again, I'd encourage you to check it out sometime. I think get it Redbox or Netflix. But the more we're aware of them rather than just being a victim of them, we have a chance to make a difference. So I want you to watch this. It's going to show how disgust works. It's a dad feeding his little girl broccoli, which that's disgusting anyway, if you've ever smelled broccoli. But watch what's going on, what's in her thought life, what's going on with her emotions, and then let's see if we can figure out how we work.
Here we go. All right, open.
This looks new.
Think it's safe?
What is it? Okay, caution. There is a dangerous smell, people. Hold on, what is that?
This is disgust. She basically keeps Riley from being poisoned, physically and socially.
That is not brightly colored or shaped like a dinosaur. Hold on, guys. It's broccoli! Yucky! Well, I just saved our lives. Ooh. Yeah, you're welcome.
Riley, if you don't eat your dinner, you're not gonna get any dessert.
Wait, did he just say we couldn't have dessert?
That's anger. Cares very deeply about things being fair.
So that's how you want to play it, old man? No dessert? Oh, sure. We'll eat our dinner right after you eat this.
Right. Here comes an airplane.
Oh, airplane. We got an airplane, everybody.
Some of us don't understand why we feel the way we do in any given moment and how it can fluctuate like this. The reality is that's just how we're made. And anger, there is absolutely nothing wrong with anger. Anger is a healthy, it's a normal emotion. The thing about it is the more powerful the emotion, the more critical it is to learn how to understand and control it. Listen to what it says here in Ephesians 4. It says, in your anger, do not sin. Now, it's not saying when you're angry, that's a sin. It says, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. The idea is that when I'm angry, it's a powerful emotion. I need to figure out what to do with it, and I need to do it sooner rather than later so I can deal with it rather than it dealing with me. What I like to do is look at some sources of anger. This is not complete. It's broad categories. And then we're going to look at some terrible ways or poor solutions in dealing with it, and then one that can lead us to some help and some freedom. Here's the context for this. This is in James 4. It says, where do you think wars and quarrels come from? And that's both international and interfamilial and all the other areas where we fight and argue and war and all that. Do you think they just happen? Think again. They come about because you want your own way and you fight for it deep inside yourselves. There is something about self-centeredness that we all deal with. And when you couple that with anger, we can get in big trouble. Here's some categories or sources for anger. The first one is injustice. And that's both big and small things. Simple example, you're in the checkout line at Costco, and there are 18 people in front of you and 18 people behind you, and everyone's waiting their turn, and they open a new checkout line, and the 18 people behind you get in that line. And you're thinking, well, that's not right. Why didn't they ask the first come, first serve? What? You know, and you start boiling, and you start wanting to throw your, you know, huge containers of tuna fish at people. It's not fair. It's not just. One that may be a little bit more warranted. You've applied for a job. You know you're highly qualified. You also happen to know some of the other candidates, and you realize the one that gets the job is the one that knew someone in the company. Had nothing to do with qualifications. It had to do with who knew who and passing on favors. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. There was a time when, and a lot of the movies depict Jesus as kind of quiet and mild and well manicured. And then you read the story about when he shows up at the temple and he sees they've turned it into this parade of money exchanging in a horrible way, where it's just almost like a pawn shop they're running. And he gets furious, rightly so. This is righteous anger. And he turns over the table and just sets everything on its ear. There is time when injustice ought to be dealt with. We just need to be careful with it and how we do it. Quite frankly, I think for most of us, we ought to get angry less about a lot of the things we do and more angry about things that we tend to just ignore of injustice. Another one is just frustration. Frustration is simply this: I have a goal and something gets in the way. Usually somebody else gets in the way of me accomplishing my goal and I get mad. I'll give you an example that I don't know if it's ever happened in your house. I do believe it happened in ours a few times, and Becky's been the primary cook because most of us want to be able to eat, and I'm not the best cook, where she'd go out of her way to make a meal. And all different kinds of things, she's really worked hard at it, and it's on the table at the right time, everything's the right temperature, and maybe someone's not there on time. And you wait, and you wait, and you wait. And she gets frustrated because her goal was, we all have this great meal and all this together, and somebody, maybe me, didn't show up on time. So it's easy. Frustration happens, and it can be big things, little things, but frustration leads to anger, and then I got to deal with it. Another is humiliation, where you perceive that someone has slighted you, they put you down, they've snubbed, or they've ignored you, and you feel this growing resentment and anger. In Annapolis, several weeks ago, a guy named Jared Ramos lost it. My guess is it was a combination of humiliation and the next one we'll look at. Some articles had been run about a harassment suit that he had lost. He ended up filing, it was a complaint harassment suit, a woman he had been following, all this kind of stuff happened. The paper ran some things about it. He got mad, he sued him, didn't win, finally just took his gun, shows up, and he murders 5 people at the Annapolis Star. Humiliation, and I think this 4th category, and that's personal attack. I think he felt personally attacked, and he was going to do something about it. And he did something pretty definitive. When we feel personally attacked, it could be out of fear, it could be out of kind of a boiling resentment, and then we feel threatened, and then we do something about it. This is how anger works. There are 3 solutions I want to look at, and I got these from a book called The Anger Workbook. I'd encourage you to get that if this is an issue for you. Les Carter, Frank Minerth. Minerth is with the Minerth Meyer Clinics. And they look at these 3 dangerous ways people tend to approach dealing with anger. I've reworded a little bit of it, but the majority of this is from them. And then I'm going to give us a fourth one that I think is a healthy category. The first is open aggression. We're pretty familiar with this one. This is people, and you are openly aggressive if you can identify with any of these or have had this pointed out to you. You're blunt, you're loud, you're defensive, you're pushy. You've been referred to as strong-willed. You give advice without being asked, maybe repeatedly. You run over people when you're dealing with a problem. For you, the problem is more important than the people. And in fact, many times the people are the problem. And it can show up in a bunch of ways. Open aggression can be this outward kind of stuff, explosiveness, rage, intimidation, blame, that kind of thing. But there are other ways that are less extreme. It may be that you bicker and fight, you're critical, you gripe, you use sarcasm. Sarcasm's an interesting one because if someone gets offended, you can say, oh, I was just joking. And the reality is, you're angry, and you wanted to make a point, and you wanted them to bleed when you made the point. With open aggression, the primary focus is on yourself. And others are very secondary. And we live in a culture that is saturated with this. We have access to platforms, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, and other ones, where we can be extremely bold and aggressive behind a screen. And I think it's taken people's anger and it's given them a way to be more aggressive with it in what they might feel is a safer platform, but it is really harmful. The other side of that would be passive-aggressive. Instead of being open, passive-aggressive, these kind of people, they sulk, they pout, they have pity parties about themselves, and they find devious ways to get revenge, but they're doing it in a way where they don't feel vulnerable. They're not willing to be openly aggressive. They're going to find more subtle, secretive ways to do it. It's still primarily focused on myself. I've been offended, I've been hurt, there's an injustice, and I'm gonna make someone pay for this. Passive aggressives want to have control, but they want to do it in a way that doesn't make them vulnerable, doesn't make them necessarily a target for others because they feel it's too risky. So passive aggressives, they'll funnel their anger into things like gossiping. Well, did you hear about? They're not going to go directly to somebody. They're going to go to other people, and they're going to try to assassinate their character behind their back. Passive aggressives are really good at the silent treatment. They ghost people real quickly, so they'll finally get the message and pay. And what's interesting is if people don't get the message, then they start building up resentment. They may become openly aggressive, but at least they start off this way. Passive aggressives also will drag their feet on projects or decisions to make others pay, make them realize something's going on, or frustrate them because they know they can, they have the power to do it. There's a third category, and that's people that are hidden suppressors. And this many times, I think, has kind of paraded as maybe the more mature spiritual approach. If I'm real godly, this is the way I need to handle it. And it's you want to come across unfazed by things, and you want to deny the fact that you feel angry. You want to pretend that it's not there, it's not really a big deal. So you're not going to take an aggressive approach or a passive one. You're just going to pretend it's not there, and so you stuff it and stuff it and stuff it. You're going to go along to get along because that's what you're supposed to do. And you don't want to get into any kind of difficult circumstances where things might become heated because that's not proper. An unwillingness to admit your anger, and then what happens is you end up creating all this kind of turmoil inside. Stuffing it is not healthy, and there are all kind of studies about this, about what it's done to people physically and emotionally and mentally. The longer you stuff this kind of thing, anger and resentment and all the more harm it ends up doing. And it creates this environment where the resentment continues to grow, and then there's either an implosion or an explosion. I have a friend that spent 7 years in prison. He was one of the nicest people on the surface you'd ever know. But there came a time where he'd had all he could take, and he took matters in his own hands and did significant harm because it had been stuffed, it had been suppressed. Anger, when you feel angry, when you recognize it happening, it's like a light on the dashboard of your, a light on the dashboard of the car means I ought to do something, I ought to look at it. Now, some of us, what we do is we either put tape over the light so we don't see it, or we try to find out where's the wire going to it so I can turn it off. I don't want to see the light. You do that with your car and you're going to end up walking or using Uber. You do that with your anger when your emotional dashboard is flashing red, and you're going to create a lot of problems. So that light is a signal. I need to do something. I need to check this out. I need to look at the owner's manual. And those of us that are followers of Jesus know that's what the Bible is. And that's where we learn this fourth way of dealing with anger that is really, really practical, very helpful, and it's based on the way we're wired, and that is humble submission to God and then to others. To God first, and then to others. This is the real pathway to freedom. And whether it's any of the emotions that we feel, especially anger, because it's so powerful. I need to humbly submit myself to God. to figure out, so what's really going on here? And to be honest about it. Listen to what Psalm 139, I cannot tell you how many times I have prayed this. And it's one, it's worth memorizing and posting anywhere you can. Listen, it says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart." Notice it doesn't say, "Search Bobby or Sally," because they really need help. "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me along the path of everlasting life." The whole point of this is I need to accept personal responsibility for my thoughts, my attitudes, my feelings, and my actions and choices. If my primary focus is examining others and pointing out their faults and failures and saying something like this, "Well, you made me mad." That is not true. No one makes you anything. The moment you do that, you have said, "This person has power over me, and I'm a victim. I am no longer a chooser in my life." Now, did something they do lead you to a point where you got angry? Sure. But when you say, "You made me anything," you've now surrendered control and responsibility for your life, and that's unacceptable. I have a friend that knew I was doing this, Dan Deaver, who's one of our newest staff members, and he sent this to me. It's a writer that has helped parents. And I'm going to say, anything that you're willing to teach your kids, do your homework. And he's teaching parents how to help their kids to learn to make choices and how to respond to things in a proper and healthy way. Listen to what he says. This is the things that parents need to teach their kids, and I would say primarily by example, then by your words. Listen to this. "I can only control one thing in life, myself. I cannot control other people, how they behave or how they react. I cannot control situations and circumstances. Most are beyond my control. It is not my job to control other people's emotions." I would say it's also not my job to correct other people's emotions. "I relinquish, and I need to relinquish my need to be right and prove my point. It is not my job to make other people believe what or how I do. When I react to other people or situations, I surrender power over my emotions, energy, and time to those people and situations. I need to refuse to give power of my emotions and thoughts to others or in circumstances. I need to be responsible and take responsibility for my life." There's so much about this, but there's another passage here I want you to look at, James 1, 19 and 20. It says, "My dear brothers and sisters, be quick to listen." The idea of listening means to understand what's really going on in a situation. "Slow to get angry." Or just slow to speak and slow to get angry. "Your anger can never make things right in God's sight." There are occasions where there is call for righteous anger. But my guess is that you're like me and that many times my anger is not so much righteous, it's more self-righteous. We need to resist when anger first erupts, we need to resist responding in that and really look hard. Gather all the facts that we can. Get a full scope of the situation. Pray as we do. Ask God to help us see what's going on with me and then help me to understand what's going on with this other person or the circumstances. I had someone that I really appreciate. They were very honest the other day. We were talking and they said, "I got really mad at X." Well, Edgar. I don't know anyone named Edgar. So I got really mad at Edgar. I reached out. I was trying to get things, and Edgar completely blew me off, just ignored me, didn't say a word. I was furious. And then and the fury started picking up all kind of other ways Edgar has let the person down. Then they found out that the email they sent Edgar was the wrong address. Edgar had never gotten the email. Edgar hadn't blown him off. Edgar didn't even know anything was going on. But this person had gotten furious without having any of the facts. They just had snippets. But again, it was, when I get angry, it's generally because I've got my own self-interest in the forefront of my thinking. And others They're either supporting that or they're getting in the way. Another principle here related to anger. Listen, Proverbs 19:11 says, people with good sense restrain their anger. They earn esteem by overlooking wrongs. Now, another translation, one I memorized years ago, it says, a man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a wrong. Now, some of us are thinking, well, that's stupid. If someone wrongs me, I need to point it out. Well, here's the principle that I understand this verse is teaching in context of the rest of the Bible. An occasional offense, let it go. Just let it go. And isn't that how you'd like people to treat you? If every once in a while you blow it, do you want them to constantly point out and sound the alarm, blow the whistle? No, you'd like them to give you some grace. So if it's an occasional offense, let it go. If it's a pattern, if it's something that's continual, then in a loving response to them, you need to find a way to point it out, but not an arrogant, it's all about you mentality. That means that if you tend to be one of these people that is openly aggressive, that means you don't go blasting them and correcting them and yelling at them and all this kind of, or trying to intimidate them. If you tend to be more passive, that means you're not going to give them the silent treatment, ghost them, or make them pay. If you're a suppressor, it means you're not going to just hold on to that and let that be more data that builds resentment. What it means is if it's at a point where you need to point it out, you speak the truth to them in love. And you have the courage to go to them without blasting them and saying, you know, boy, this really hurt when this happened, or this is something I've seen and I'd really like for us to be able to, I mean, or there are ways to deal with things that are right. And then there are ways that are horribly damaging. This is something Becky and I struggle with for a long time in our marriage. I tend to be more the open, aggressive kind of person. Becky tends to be, not passive, she tends to be the suppressor and hold stuff in. That's not a great combination because I give her a lot of stuff to stuff. And she'll take it. And I can do a lot of harm in that. And we've got two other kids in our family, and they're wired very differently. And we realize there's a dynamic here, and we've really got to look at it. I grew up in my home, it was an angry home. I won't get into all the details of that. My dad and I are doing great now, but it was really bad growing up. In Becky's home, she never once saw her parents argue. She never even saw them disagree. That's not healthy either. But you put these two extremes together, and what you have is utter chaos. And so we've had to work at this. I've had to learn to be kinder and in learning to point out things that need to be addressed, but in a way that's kind and gentle and loving. She's need to learn how to express herself when she's fearful to do it. Oh, I don't want to make things bad, or I don't want to create more stuff. And she has to learn to step out there and take the risk. It's no risk for me to do it. What the risk for me is being kind. Because I think, oh, it's letting it go. We need to address it now. And I'm going to tell you that God has a way for us to handle this kind of thing and to let the emotion drive us to do something healthy, not just to fall prey to it and create all kind of hellacious harm in our homes, in our families, in our communities. I mean, this is something that is really, really serious, and we're surrounded by it. I want you to take just a minute, and I want you to think about your own life. And if you were praying this, search me, O God, what would He say to you about how anger impacts your life? Which one of the categories best fits you? Are you openly aggressive? And maybe ask yourself, so what do people tend to say about me? Are you one of these passive aggressives? That you've got subtle ways to get even and get revenge? Or are you one that's been bottling up and suppressing it, and you know it. You know it's there if you're really honest. In fact, you try to keep yourself from even thinking about it because there are things that actually some have told you, say, why aren't you angry about it? You say, oh, I don't get angry. Which one would be you? And if you don't come up with anything, that's okay. If you can't think of something right now in your life where you're dealing with anger and you need to deal with it more healthily, think about this. Is there someone that may be angry at you? Someone that you know you're in their crosshairs. And there's something going on. You've been trying to ignore it or avoid it, and maybe you've done this for years, but you know it's there. And it's creating all kind of tension and harm. It's impacted your life and theirs. And again, if you don't have someone that you can think of with that, think about this. Who in your orbit do you know where anger is really causing havoc? Could be in your neighborhood where you got neighbors that are just like this. It could be at work. It could be extended family. You're not directly involved in it, but you know it's happening. You're aware of it. You've been observing. They confide in you some of that. Now I want you to listen to what Ephesians 4 tells us. This is our instruction manual. What God tells us to do with anger and all the parts of it. It says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, and slander, as well as all types of malicious behavior. That's anything that causes harm to others. Instead, be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another just as God through Christ has forgiven you. If you're the angry person, this is a mandate for you. I have got to begin I've got to start dealing with this anger thing. And I need to start dealing with it in a healthy way. It's going to start by humbly surrendering myself to God and letting Him have room to remake me and to cause me to think differently. If you're on the receiving end, it means you've got to figure out how to handle someone else's anger towards you in a God-honoring way. What does that look like? What does it mean for me not to retaliate the way I want to and the way I believe they deserve, because there's an injustice here? And then for all of us in the environments we're in, we can be peacemakers. When someone gossips to you about someone, you can say, time out, what's going on? When you're around an environment where people are bitter and angry and you're thinking, wow, I'm just glad I'm not in that. Maybe what happens is you need to get involved so you can help broker some peace or some understanding. The time to be a spectator is not now. Time is for you and I, those of us that are followers of Jesus, to be involved in a healthy way. Hopefully to bring peace, understanding, and reconciliation. Ephesians 4 reminds us, this is what we started with. It says, in your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Let's pray together. God, I know that there are people here, people watching, where anger is a constant in their life. And it's caused all kind of harm and damage and is continuing to. I pray, whether they're openly aggressive, passive, or stuffing it, that today they would take a step towards you and ask for your help. Not justify, not excuse it, not ignore it, but just say, God, I need your help. I need your help to handle my anger so that I handle it well. And that both I can be healed, but the people around me can be too. And God, all of us know people around us that are caught up in a spiral of anger. There's frustration, there's growing hatred and animosity, and it's, while it may be normal in our culture now, it is abnormal for people to be healthy and for a society to be strong and healthy. There are some things that we ought to be more angry about, injustices that need to be righted. But God, we need to handle even that in a way that is honorable and right. And I pray that you would help each one of us to decide that we're going to be your man or your woman on the scene in our own lives, in our circles of influence, our families. And we're going to do something about this anger thing, starting with us. I ask all this in Jesus' name and for his sake.